This meeting is being recorded. This is the Netherlands Fire Protection District Board of Directors special meeting agenda. Special meeting for September the 23rd, 2020. Effectively an operational meeting to discuss outstanding operational issues. The agenda, start with the roll call. Ian Owen Bell, I'm present. Patrick Richardson. He is not present. Todd Weisler.
Present, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Very good.
Present. I'm present.
Okay. Henry is absent, traveling. Peter is not with us this evening. We have a board quorum. So I'm going to announce this meeting, call this meeting to order at 19:03. Make a motion to approve the meeting agenda. There were a couple of changes. There was a couple of purchase requests that were passed on. I think that was it. Outside of that, the agenda is as I posted yesterday. So I'm going to make the motion that we approve the agenda for this evening.
So moved.
Second.
We don't have any meeting minutes to approve. I think I sent them out yesterday, but they still need to be checked. So we'll move those to next week, and I should have all 3 weeks' meetings minutes really, and I'll get them out as soon as I can. Do you have any public statements or comments at this time? Take that as no. No treasurer's report in this meeting, as it's an interim operational meeting. So this meeting really is follow up on some of the items that we discussed last week. We actually have some costs in for those. So I sent you all the spreadsheet for the hose testing, pump testing, and ladder testing costs. Ryan just sent me a current one, or more up-to-date one. Bottom line is, Ryan, are you on? I had a question for you.
Yes, I'm on.
The ladder testing, is that per ladder? I couldn't quite work that out, or per foot of ladder. So did you catch that question?
Oops, sorry, I got to unmute when I talk. So that cost is per foot. So I pulled up our last ladder test, which was in 2017, and we tested 214 linear feet. So okay. I used the base number of 250, just because I think we might have a little bit more with 17 being in service.
Okay, excellent. Okay, I wasn't quite sure. I got confused on that. So that basically puts us about $5,000 for everything. Most of that I believe we can push to next year. But the, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rand, the hose testing we were trying to get done this year to get 2 years of ISO, or we'll be trying to get everything done this year?
I have to double check. I know hose testing needs to get done this year for ISO. But honestly, I can't remember about ladder. and pump. I believe pump testing should be done as well. I think ladder is kind of variable, but hose at the bare minimum. And I'm pretty sure pump testing as well, but ladder I'm just not 100% sure of. Trying to search for guidance for it, like looking up ISO gives you all the ISO 9001 stuff, and it's very hard. But I can talk to you later, Ian, about where I need to go to get that.
Okay.
It wasn't the pump testing by Waterways the only one that I saw a time constraint? It said pump testing in October. Over to the right. Available in October.
So yeah, Waterways, but two other places offered it. Sorry, I don't have my spreadsheet up, but I'm trying to read my spreadsheet shrunk to half the size. So Ian, can you scroll a little bit left of my pump test? So I think Aces was one that would do it now. There's two places. There's two places I would do it now and on site. And
okay.
So I believe I had scheduled one of those. I think it was Aces, 1850. And they can do it, you know, I believe that they should be able to do it this year.
Okay. So it's more like just as you schedule them, they'll come up within some constraints, but not like you should be able to get it scheduled in this year, is what you're saying.
We're running into a time crunch. I got a quote from Firecat, which also can do, I think, hang on, I'm trying to flip through my notes. No, Firecat actually did hose testing at 35 cents a foot, and they are already booked out through 2020. So some of these places, I did not check availability, but I think we should be able to get the hose testing under, I believe, Aces. I can't remember. Sorry, I don't have my spreadsheet in front of me because otherwise I'd move off this screen and everything would go fall apart. But hose testing and Aces for pump testing. Yeah, Firecat for hose testing. Or actually, they're unavailable. So sorry, I can't see this on the screen. Hose would have to be Waterways.
Okay.
But on Waterways, I'd have to contact them. When I was talking to them, they said that they might have scheduling issues.
Gotcha. Okay. So I guess the question is, does the board want to do hose testing this year so we can get 2 years of ISO in? I appreciate the expense. Any thoughts?
Yeah, this isn't budgeted, correct?
This is not budgeted. It probably would have fallen under the general firefighting budget, which has been rather decimated by the vehicle maintenance.
Yeah.
In a second, let me just pull up the last budget, right, or the last EVA that I have.
Ryan, question for you. So we get this testing done towards the very end of 2020. Does it say, oh, Nellon Fire Department got their testing done and it applies to all the full calendar year 2020, or does it start in October and then go to the next October 2021? And then we have to get the testing done again to cover the next year. Do you know?
It's calendar year.
Calendar year. So anytime in 2020, if we get the testing done, it accounts for the year 2020, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Give me 1 second. I'm hunting down a different spreadsheet. So, did you update the our financials worksheet with more up-to-date numbers from August by any chance?
No. Kathy just got back Monday night. So I talked to her by phone, but I haven't followed up with her on getting the updated numbers for August.
Okay. So the answer to your question is no, this was not budgeted.
Yeah, I think we, I'm going to see if I can get the numbers from our EN, and I'll try to get that done this weekend. And then maybe next week's operational meeting, we could address it again.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That would make sense. I'd like to see up-to-date numbers before we make a full decision on this. Now at least we have actual costs we can work on.
Yeah.
And I'll say next week we'll have a better idea of where the budget is at the end of September as well. No, we're in September, sorry. At the end of August. And we should have interim numbers for September. But in answer to your question, yes, I think it would fall in the general firefighting budget.
And Ian, I'm going to switch computers real quick so I can tell you which company is not available. So I'm going to be
okay. Thanks.
Unavailable.
We're fairly heavy over budget in firefighting. So, okay, we will place that back on the agenda next week. Now we have costs. Can wait while Ryan switches computers for the lower cost gear because I think we had a conversation about that. The cascade unit that fills SCBA bottles needs repair. Costs for that $110 an hour, $180 trip charge. So basically $300 for them to come and look at it and then give us a cost on how much it's going to cost to repair. I think we should push ahead with that. I don't think it's something that we really have a choice about having you looked at.
Good.
My hope obviously would be that they would turn up and fix it. But that rarely happens. Are you back with us yet, Ryan?
Could you repeat that, Ian?
I was just wondering if Ryan was back with us yet. A lot of this other things that happened, 5621 got new tires that came in under budget, so it was good. We got that done. So that's ready for winter now, which is good. While we are still waiting for Ryan, I sent you all the introduction from the HR company. They were working on onboarding. They were in last Friday and they're coming in this Friday. to gather all the information they need. And I sent you their statement to go to the membership. I just wanted to know if either Ray or Todd, if you had any comment on that statement or any additions to that statement.
You know, I hadn't had a chance to really, maybe you have already, because you know all the policies and procedures much better than I do, but, you know, does it coincide with our present policies and procedures in as far as like how we cascade the, you know, if there's an issue, you know, how does it go to the chief? Does it go to the shift cap and then the chief and then, you know, so on and so forth? Does it follow our present policy? Do you know?
It does. Yeah, it does. The only thing it does allow is a sideways movement so that you can go to the HR organization for advice. So if you're, so I made some modifications to their original, which basically was, if your problem is with your supervisor, then you can go to the HR organization, talk to them, and get advice from them. And then they can start dealing with it. And then that would likely come to me or Patrick or one of the other board members to advise on how to either take it back internally or deal with it from there on.
So that's that was the only thing that came to mind. Otherwise, I think it looks great.
Yeah. The rest of it was follow the chain of command. And then we involved the HR organization when we either reach a roadblock or run out of options. I guess it's the same thing.
Yeah.
So I pulled it up real quick and so sorry.
Sorry, Ryan, go ahead. You're good. Or you just muted yourself. Ryan, are you still there?
Yes. Okay. Am I talking now?
You're talking. Sorry. Go on.
Okay. So Waterways is booked, but Firecat, who's still like 10 cents a foot of hose more expensive, I sent them an email saying, hey, are you guys still available? And that went out this afternoon, and I've not heard anything back from them yet.
Okay. So we're still waiting on them anyway.
Correct.
So they were 35 a foot. Okay. So it could be up to $2,800 then if we have 8,000 feet that needs testing.
So 8,000 feet, and I pulled that off of, Patrick had suggested 4,000, but talking to these guys, they said with our number of trucks, it's more likely 8,000. And I kind of asked around and 8,000 sounds about correct. So maybe it's a bit more, but I had to pick a number.
Okay, that's fine. All right, well, we'll wait until find out if they've got availability first. And then we can recheck that number next week. If you let me know availability, I can always communicate that so that we can get a head start if we need to.
Okay, sounds good.
I think you and I had this conversation, I can't find an email about it, but about lower cost gear for new recruits that we spoke about last week. I think you said you found some, is that correct?
Yes, it's lower cost stuff. It costs versus about $5,000 per set. This would take the price down to about $4,000.
Okay. So it's good to know. So I'm starting to work on the budget this weekend. So I'll work on the 5,000 cost in the budget, and then we can modify that if we need to.
Okay, but tied into that, you know, that's just the equipment cost. Everyone we have, for the most part, has equipment now.
Yes.
But this is going to be a question for the board of how many structure firefighters do you want to bring on board next year, and how many do you think we can afford to bring on board next year? So okay. I think that's kind of at the bottom of it.
All right. We can look at that when we get into the budget. I sent out to the board the new recruit procedure outline that Ryan had put together. One second to find that. Did everybody have a chance to read that? Any comments on it?
I just have a quick question. In the section where it talks about the recruit phase, it talks about three disciplines. My first question is, today do we do that? Or is it, you get a recruit, they're expected to learn all three disciplines, and that's just kind of the expectation?
So this is Brian, so I'll answer that. We really have no disciplines, no expectations. Which has kind of been one of the difficult things, is people being kind of brought on and I feel like not given any guidance or any direction about which way to go.
Yeah.
So we have a good number of people with no certifications. And so this kind of be like, hey, if you want to go into a burning building, you have to go do this. If you want to go out, you know, on a wildland fire, you have to reach this point. If you want to be on the ambulance, reach that point. So currently we have nothing like this in place.
Okay. Then my second question is, it says there's three areas of proficiency, and then it says that they ideally, the recruits would complete all three areas, and then it goes into saying the recruits would ideally be able to complete this within one calendar year. So I'm assuming that means first of all, that statement says recruits ideally would be able to complete at least one discipline with one calendar year. Is that my understanding correct there?
So it'd be ideal that everyone does all three, but there's some pretty time intensive things. The shortest course there is S-131-90, which is 40 hours. Probably next in line is going to be Fire Academy, which lasts about 3 months, two nights a week and every Saturday. And then EMT class is going to be the longer one, which can be up to 6 months. So if someone's super dedicated, they can crank it all out in a year, but that's not very realistic.
So it's not likely within 1 year that a recruit would complete all three. So is the expectation that the recruit would at least complete one discipline within that one calendar year?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Okay. And then how, we might want to clarify that, but then how does the department decide what recruit does what discipline, or is it up to the recruit to decide, I want to do wildland fire or I want to do structure fire? You know, how did that decision made, you know, which discipline they'll concentrate on?
So part of what will, which is not, it's part of this, but I'm rolling it out, is asking people what they want to do. And asking people to prioritize, you know, okay, here are your three choices. And I did not attach the sheet. I was like, what's your number one, number two, and number three? So it might self-vet itself. Otherwise, we might have to make some decisions about who gets to do what. And again, this also goes back to budget. Like if we only have budget for five people to go to Structure Fire Academy, we're going to have to be a lot stricter. And to me, I would lean more towards putting people that live in district as a preference. I just haven't written that preference policy yet because some of the people mm-hmm. that live out of district, we don't have a good history of actually keeping them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my thought was, is it going to be up to the recruit to decide the discipline, or is it the department that's saying, hey, we need more EMS people, or we need more wildland fire people? And so we try to push them in that direction. And of course, like you said, Ryan, that also it might come down to budget and what gear we have and so on. So wouldn't that be more, I'm trying to understand how we could balance it with the department needs and maybe what the recruit desires as far as a discipline to pursue.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to vet it kind of with the recruit's desires, but that's why I think the biggest withholding point for the next year is going to be money. And there's a separate spreadsheet that went out about how much it costs to equip each person. You know, with a wildland firefighter, I believe at like $2,000, EMS person, you know, like $1,500, you know, or less. But wildland is far and away the cheapest. The class costs $80. You know, it's 40 hours. And the equipment's relatively inexpensive. So I think it's going to come down to me, hopefully primarily recruits' preference, and then it's going to be what we can afford to do.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see maybe wildland as something that we encourage people to do. A, because it's the cheapest, and B, because it's one of those things where you need a lot of people power. And then structure fire or EMS as a secondary discipline, that they may have more interest in either one of those. But obviously it's hard to know until you talk to people what their thing is that they're more interested in.
But that's interesting, Ian. That's maybe not a bad approach to say, we want you to do wildland and either structure or EMS.
Yeah.
At least as a start, you know?
Yeah, in the first year.
I think it's kind of inferred almost, knowing the system, that wildland's going to be the almost easy way in. Because I did say, if you already have training in one of the other disciplines, you'll receive priority for another one.
Right.
Yeah. That's good wording. Okay. So I liked it.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. Maybe just do some cleanup in the kind of language on our preferences, how the preferences would work for you getting to go to like fire academy or EMT school, just so that's a bit clearer. But otherwise, it looked good to me.
Okay, sounds good.
A question that came up this week, and as we only have three board members, I might ask that we push this out a little bit because it gets a bit complex. But this is a conversation that's come up in the department a number of times. I got asked the question this week about persons who are concealed carry weapons licensed and their status with their weapon in the department. So there is actually a policy for this, which having done a little bit of background on, find it, give me a sec. So basically we do have a policy for this, which basically appears to be correct that under Colorado law, the department can't prevent a licensed permit holder from bringing a concealed weapon onto the premises. I think from my conversations I've had before, where it gets a bit more complex is, should people take concealed weapons on calls? And I know there's some strong opinions in the department on that. There are some legal hoops and twists involved in carrying a concealed weapon on a call, specifically, for instance, if you go to the post office, that creates problems. I think this might look at the policy in there. I think the board may need to think about doing some work on some guidelines about how this could work. And it may require running past an attorney to make sure we don't trip over statute, because the statute is pretty clear that you can't prevent a concealed weapons carrier from carrying their weapon anywhere unless it's explicitly defined. And there's a very narrow range of definitions on that. Any board opinions on this?
I agree with what you said wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
It gets is this in our current manual or is this something you drafted?
This is in the current manual. And this has been in the manual for at least since 2009 in this form. But there's no clear guidance as to storage of weapons in the department, where your weapon should be in the department, things like that, which I think legally we can draft guidelines for. What we can't do is say you can't carry on the premises or can't bring your weapon to the premises. I suspect this will need, we'll need to take some input from the membership on this to see where they sit as well. And I don't know, at this current time, I don't know of anybody actively who carries a concealed weapon on the premises. I know it has been an issue in the past and it's caused some friction. It's coming up again. So I think it's something we should consider.
So this is Ryan. You know, a couple of the lockers have gun safes in them. And, you know, to me, that's not a public spot because public's not supposed to be back there. And I actually got sent a membership application. The guy's like, oh, and here's my concealed carry permit.
Right.
I don't know this person from anybody. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of unsettling to me that this person wants to me, if he's sending me a copy of his permits, he's planning on bringing it here. Why else would you do it? And right. They definitely don't belong on calls. That is way outside of any level of liability I think we should be assuming. I believe leave it in your car. And I do understand there's a certain aspect of Colorado law, but to me, the public area of the station is like in the front door. Once you go past Jim's office, that's no longer the public area. You know, it's just, we don't know a lot of these people. And if we're going to be getting more people in here, I just think the chance of a mishap are too great.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I'm not sure what the definition of public area is, because as a...
All we have to do is put up some signing, as little as a sticker, and that secures it.
It's not enforceable in law. And not in a local government building, which is what I think we are. So in the...
The only places currently that are prohibited is post offices and schools.
Correct.
So you can get a sticker under state law. You get a sticker that shows a gun with a circle through it. And at that point, it makes it a non-carrying premises. But you have to identify probably every door.
Yeah, I think that's where it's a little bit vague. I know you can do that. And you can do that as a private business owner or on private land. The statute is very unclear as to how that applies to government buildings. Or government buildings that don't have a fixed security checkpoint that you have to pass through. So what I'm trying to do is not end up on the wrong side of statute.
Well, actually, I'm a little wrong. It's post offices, schools, government, courthouses.
Yeah.
All them type of places, and especially the type that have a metal detector at the front door.
Yes. So.
But for a private business that doesn't want that on in their business, all they have to put a sign on the door. Right. And it can be as little as just a sticker.
Exactly. You start to see the not complexity, the kind of width of the of how they drafted the law. It's very vague, which is why I said if we go into this, I think it's a little bit of a turning time to go, what's the true path on this? Because the fire department is not a private organization. It's a local government entity, or local government entity as defined in the statute. And that is not covered in the carrying restrictions. So I don't think it's entirely as strong as it could be.
Yeah, and as we dig into this, maybe we should check our liability insurance as well. I don't know if that would be something that could be in there.
And I think that's covered if we can set up some proper guidelines that cover this.
Well, we've had quite a few, I guess not quite a few, but we've had a few individuals that are law enforcement that are on the they've been on the department.
Right. But when you're on the department, you're not acting in the capacity of a law enforcement officer, say. Complexity or police officers.
Right? Hendrickson, being a retired police officer, he's entitled to carry if he wants.
That is true. But it's not whether you're entitled to carry or not. It's whether you should carry within the department, I think, is the question. More so. And as Ryan brought up, based on you don't know people's training or abilities with a firearm or their opinion on what is safe and not safe with a firearm. Those are the kind of bits where you get into the weeds, a bit into the complexity. And like I said, as there's only three of us here, this probably is a full board discussion to have, and probably with some more background, if I can pick some up, or anybody else can find some. I had a quick look yesterday and I didn't really get any specific answers either way. Certainly for Colorado. In other states, there's some very clear answers, which I may or may not agree with them. Okay, so I'm going to leave this on the agenda moving forward. I'm sure it's going to generate a lot of discussion in the department. And like I said, I think it should be a discussion within the department as well, generally.
Hey, Ian, is there a way to, if somebody wants to carry, we don't let them carry as a recruit, they can sign something saying that I as a recruit, I understand that I can't carry.
I assume we'd have to do some kind of waiver to sidestep the statute to make that work, yeah. Because it would have to be an agreement.
I mean, with Ryan's.
Go on.
Sorry, Ian, are you still there? My 3 kilobytes is working as hard as it can.
Yes, I am.
Sorry, you said you thought about signing away?
I mean, possibly you could do a waiver for it, but I don't know what the legal ramifications of that is. Not a lawyer. That would be an attorney question.
Okay. I mean, we've spoken about my thoughts on it, so I don't really need to add any more to that. I was just curious if we can do it with, you know, as Ryan says, I don't know who this person is. If that's a way that we can kind of backdoor it.
For me, I would say I would discourage it, but obviously we can't outright say no at this stage, because that puts us in conflict with statute. I don't know that necessarily answers your question, Ryan, unfortunately.
Okay, all I was just asking was just like open it up for discussion.
Yeah, that's good. That's fine. Like I said, I'll leave it on for discussion, do a bit more background.
Can you hear anything?
Yeah.
Where we get to? Unless anybody else has anything else.
Are they talking about this?
If nobody has anything else, can we move on to the new business, please?
Is this your screen or theirs?
Sounds good.
Rick Henriksen asked me a couple of weeks, and I did not get it on the agenda. And I know this has been on the board agenda some time back. About fee schedules for doing fire inspections and plan reviews and sprinkler inspections and reviews. He passed on to me a copy of a previously discussed fee worksheets. And I did send this out to the board last night in all the details I sent you. He's basically done a couple of sprinkler inspections for Timberline that we need to bill for. And so the board needs to pass a schedule of fees, at least for the current time. So did the board get a chance to look at those fees last night? Or have you seen them yet?
I looked at them. I was honestly, to tell you the truth, I was wondering, what is this? So now I get it. This is basically our team doing inspections, and what would we charge for doing those inspections, correct?
Yeah, and they're broadly in line with Black Hawk's fees and Evergreen's fees.
Gotcha.
I think we discussed back in a board meeting last year, and no conclusion was come to. But I don't think we can bill without having an official schedule of fees set.
Yeah.
My real question to both you and Ray is, are you happy to set this as an interim schedule of fees just so that we can issue the invoice for the two sprinkler inspections that Rick did for Timberline?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it's in line. Somebody wouldn't jump out of their chair if they saw a bill, and we have comparison fees from other districts, so it looks good to me.
Ray, any comments?
Hey, Ian,
it's been a long.
Sorry, Ham. Ray, go ahead.
We've been working towards this for a long time.
Yeah, I believe so. I think I heard it in last year's board meeting, but yeah, like I said, we need to invoices, so we need to make a decision as to whether we want to make this our interim schedule or whether we want to work on it or whether we'd like to continue to review this. But this review has been going on for rather a long time.
Should we have a motion to adopt these fees or the schedule of fees?
Yes, I believe we should.
No, so it's all moved.
Create a motion.
Okay.
So a motion to adopt these fees.
I'll second the motion. Ray, you approve the motion?
I said so moved.
Okay. So we'll approve to you. Past the schedule of fees as it stands here. Sorry, Charlie, were you trying to say something there? Okay. I will pass that on to Kathy so she can complete the invoicing for that. Let me get that moved along. I had two purchase requests. One for two vacuum cleaners because the ones that we currently have are no longer functioning. And also two for replacement air purifiers for the same reason, they no longer function.
Clarification, yeah, because all of our, this is Ryan again, our vacuum cleaners were basically bought from the dump and we do not have any air purifiers at this time.
Right, okay. And just on the air purifiers front, were you looking at ones that were like HEPA and sort of UV light, kills everything kind of air purifiers?
Yes, machines of death, okay. UV and HEPA.
Okay, which I think in the current situation makes complete sense as we are heading our way back into what appears to be COVID season. I think having something that filters the air for us is a necessity. And obviously vacuum cleaners, I believe to be a no brainer. So anybody else have any opinions on that on the board?
Yeah, just as long as Ryan doesn't go to the dump to buy these two new vacuum cleaners.
Nope, I absolutely will not. They will be something we can get parts for. But yeah. To be clear, okay. It's two vacuum cleaners at $250 each for a total of $500. Air purifiers, sure. I need to shop around a bit more, but the ones I found that would work were $160 each. And honestly, we should probably get three to really cover all of our spaces, which would be the training room downstairs, kind of my office area, and then upstairs, the crew area. Not the bedrooms, but the main kitchen and day room.
I don't really have any objections to either of those. They're both things that we should have. I mean, it's not really a question.
Likewise. Yep.
Well, do we have to buy two this year? Can we do it one this year, one next?
Ray, this is Ryan again. I honestly thought about that. And what I'd like to try to do is get, like for the vacuum cleaners, for example, get ones that we know we can get one set of spare parts for. And I would ideally like to be able to roll it over till next year. But if the model changes, now we got to have a second set of spare parts for the second vacuum. I think it just keep everything a little bit simpler if we know we can get two that are identical.
I'm just worried about budget.
Yeah, I think all of this would fall in the administration budget, which the last time we updated it is pretty good.
We've been spending a lot of money on stuff that wasn't even thought of in the budget.
I appreciate that, but the things you need to clean your house, basically, at the end of the day. The vacuum cleaners that we did have were pretty poor at doing that job anyway. And we have a fairly large surface area to clean. So domestic vacuum cleaner doesn't really cut it.
Well, to Ray's point, you know, we could wait, at least table it till, again, till next week, until we have just another run of the numbers. I think Ryan's logic is good. You know, it wouldn't be a critical issue if, you know, we had to use the bad vacuum cleaners for a few more months. But Ray does bring up a good point. We might want to be careful.
I would agree with that. It's just we don't have any working vacuum cleaners right now. So I can spend $200 in parts to still have something we got for free from the dump.
I could maybe bring a vacuum cleaner down for you guys to use till the end of the year. You know, we do have a lot of vacuum cleaners around this house, unfortunately. Could it wait 1 week? Do you think, Ryan, or is the dirt piling up pretty badly?
It's up to you guys, but I don't really see the price changing another week. I mean, I literally went around and counted how many vacuum cleaners we have here right now that don't run. We have 7.
Huh? How many?
7.
Wow.
Where'd you find these prices?
I just did a search for commercial vacuum cleaners. I went underneath Staples, which is our tax-free account. So they have a good warranty program. We're already set up tax-free. So that's where I was looking.
Let's just do a little bit more background research. Sorry to do that, but I'd like to see. I think the general opinion I'm feeling here is that we need to get a couple of bids on these. So push that to next week.
Yeah, and we'll run the numbers this weekend, so we should be able to make a decision next week for sure.
That's good. Okay.
And we'll come up with some kind of solution, Ryan, whether I give you a vacuum cleaner to use for the rest of the year, we'll figure out something.
Okay.
The last two were a request for a member reimbursement, one of which has been hanging around. Well, the member reimbursement for out-of-pocket workers' comp medical costs was from an injury sustained in a training session. It ended up with about $250 medical costs that has been stuck in our system for some reason. I'd like to clean that up and get them reimbursed if that's good with the board.
I'm good with it.
Yeah, I've got all the invoices if anybody wants to see them, all the receipts, but it's all basically out of pocket that the workers comp refused to pay, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the other one was reimbursement for their EMS course that they did 2 years ago. And I believe the deal was if they stayed a year, then we reimbursed them, and that's never happened. That was $850, which was actually cheaper than Front Range. So I'd like to clear that up too, if I can, please.
That makes sense. I'm good.
Sure.
All right, I'll talk to Kathy and get those sorted out.
So moved.
The only other issue is still ongoing. 56-17, we got it back. We still haven't managed to get it to Mountain View for the diagnostics of the error codes it's throwing. So that's currently out of service. We were hoping that was going to go down today.
And it's going down first thing tomorrow morning. I'm bringing it down around 6:30.
Awesome. Okay, thank you, Charlie.
Diagnostic for what?
There's a caution light and a check engine light and a incestuous beeping that's going on that apparently you can only fix with a Pierce specific computer. And then there's some really bad banging that's going on under the engine cover. It sounds more like an engine mount or something along those lines.
Okay.
Keter didn't catch that?
I even told them about it. It was going on when I dropped it off with them. And then as soon as I picked it up, I caught a ride with Bretland down at 11 o'clock at night to when I picked it up. So I couldn't even talk to them when I picked it up. But when I picked up, the beeping and the light was still on. And they said it wasn't going on when they had the truck. So I'm not really sure what the deal is there, but so that wasn't picked up.
And how much did they charge us?
I don't know what they charged us this last time. The last time they were working on, they rotated or flipped the tires. So they flipped them so the inside went out and the outside went in, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
They replaced a couple steering column U-joints, but I haven't seen the bill. That's not, you know.
So when you say Mountain View, you mean Mountain View Fire to their tech?
I do. They just opened a new, supposedly like state-of-the-art repair facility. And Boulder Fire, which is who used to do the repairs on our truck, recommended them, and they are actually $20 an hour cheaper than Boulder Fire Maintenance. I mean, they could be terrible, or they could be great. I don't, you know, the only reference I have is from Boulder Fire, but you know, they recommended them.
Yeah, the main thing is that they're the only people that can read the PS diagnostics, so.
Boulder Fire could, and I believe Front Range Fire Apparatus could as well, but Front Range wouldn't, you know, I called them twice, left messages twice, and they didn't call me back, so.
Yeah, and then the last time we tried to use Boulder Fire, or Boulder Fleet, they were backed up until like 6 months out, so.
Yeah, they had our truck for well over a month and then gave it back to us and said we didn't have time.
Okay.
So, like I said, I'm bringing it down tomorrow. And while we're talking about trucks, if it's all right, Ian, I'll talk about 01 a little bit.
Yes. Unless,
I don't know if you did. I was a little bit late.
I didn't get around to getting your update. We've done some of it, but if you want to talk about 01, I think that's the only outstanding issue on there.
Okay. 5601, obviously, we had all the work done. We believe the front axle is still leaking. I took the drain plugs out of the front axle yesterday, made sure that they were filled to the correct level. I then pressure washed and hot the axle. It wasn't dripping yesterday, so we'll keep an eye on that. And then the pump itself is leaking, dripping. And Ryan, you can chime in. I don't know if you discovered anything further, but I drained the pump to about half tank today, and I believe it stopped leaking. So that should tell us that it's the tank refill valve that's leaking. So I've done a bunch of those, and so once we have 17 all fixed, my plan would be, unless you guys feel differently, pull 01 out of service, bring it up to station 2, and bring engine 2 down to station 1, and see if I can fix that valve for us.
That seems like an acceptable plan to me. It's not an out of service problem. It's more of an annoyance at this stage. But as we head into the winter, it will become a big problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. The only other thing I hadn't mentioned actually on your, just going through your operational update, was that from station two, we disposed of 18 old light bars and the old exhaust system, as we agreed to the other week. So that's cleaned up station two quite significantly. The shift officers have been working on their written driver operator test. So Ryan did his today, and then all three of them are doing the practical on Saturday, I believe. I'm rotating out to do that, I think.
Yes.
I just did the written today, and then Saturday's the practical. And okay. I'm working with Charlie and Dan to get them scheduled for the written, which looks like the first opportunity is actually going to be in December. Testing is just that tight.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that's moving along. And Charlie's going to set some cars up for extrication training on Saturday. So thank you for doing that, Charlie, along with all the other things you're doing. Appreciate that. And then Patrick is teaching that. We couldn't get Craig Toll, but he has other things going on, I believe. Charlie, do you know what happened with the VIN inspection on the old Jeep this morning?
The VIN inspection was done. Jim going to the clerk and recorder today when he left at noon or 1 o'clock. So that is, I'm sure he has something for us tomorrow on that.
Okay. That sounds promising. Sounds like we might get a title for that then. So we can hopefully move that along too. Cool. Charlie, did you say, just going back to a conversation from here, did you say the old O2 and the old yellow truck have both gone now?
Old O2 is still here. We haven't, we were working on the titling for the old two. We have what looks like the original, I'm trying to remember what they call it. It's like certificate for application for title that we filled out but never submitted. It's got Rick's signature on it. So my understanding would be that we have to bring that in and apply for a title, and then once we have the title, we could transfer the title.
Okay. That's all.
Jim has been in contact with the guy that I was working with last week. So hopefully the guy is willing to take the truck, and then we can give him the title once we have it.
Gotcha.
This is the old Jeep?
No, this is the yellow engine with the nuked motor or nuked pump.
Oh, the Rocky Flats truck?
Yep.
Yeah. The other one. Yeah. Okay. And then the yellow truck, 25.
That one's gone.
That's gone. We got a check for that. I see.
I think we got cash money.
Cash money, even better. Okay. I'll check with Kathy about getting that added into the.
Should go to the truck maintenance.
So I say again, right?
Put it in truck maintenance.
Yes. I'm sure we've got somewhere to put it. It's got a home. Okay, that's all I had for this week, unless anybody else has anything they need to bring up.
Ian, it's Ryan. Could you give me a quick call afterwards? I'll tell you what I need, and it'll just be quicker.
Okay. Sounds good. I will do that. Okay. Is there any further public comment at this point? That is a no. We have no other business, no executive sessions. So I'm going to make the motion that we adjourn this meeting at 20:07.
So moved.
I second.
Okay.
Excellent. Teacher, right?
So next meeting is going to be next Wednesday, the 30th at 7 p.m. If we have items for operational requirements. I'll speak to you all then. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Are we going to have like back-to-back meetings?
How do you mean back-to-back?
Well, okay. So when's our
board meetings? On
October meeting.
It's the 7th, so it's the Wednesday after.
7th, yeah.
Yeah. So it's 2 weeks from today.
So it's 2 weeks. Okay.
Yeah. And then that wouldn't be the regular board meeting.
Right.
With anything else that we need in there, which hopefully will be minimal in terms of operational because we've been keeping up with that.
Well, these are almost starting to feel like regular board meetings.
They're shorter, right?
Alrighty.
That was like an hour.
I'm ready to call it a night.
Okay, good. Okay, guys, thank you
very much. Likewise, Ray.
All right. Good night.
Talk to you later.
Good night.